Welcome to episode 80 of Formidable Opponents, a show that pits three people who have known each other virtually their entire lives in a series of conversations as we argue what is best in a variety of fun, engaging, and critical pop culture topics we all debate about. I'm Randall, and with me as always, Bob and Joseph, and today our guest is Joe Michael, and this week's topic is Best Emo Song. Everybody bust out your MySpace playlist. We're talking emo music today. Emo music, though often characterized, some would say relegated, to raw, often confessional music and an aesthetic fashion trend for those who hate their stepfathers and PE coaches, derived its spirit from the hardcore 80s punk scene. Whether you call it by any other terminology, goth, alternative, emo core, indie rock, pop punk, you cannot deny the introspective outpouring of raw sentiments mixed in with some cool heavy guitar riffs and the progressive cacophony of a lead singer who is often emoting with the same potency of a five-year-old who just got his iPad taken away from him during family dinner. Seriously, though, as much as we joke about this form of music, its ascension to the mainstream popular culture has made an impressive leap. Journalist and author Matt Deal describes emo as a more sensitive interpolation of punk's mission. AllMusic.com observes that some emo leads towards the progressive side, full of complex guitar work, unorthodox song structures, arty noise, and extreme dynamic shifts. Some emo is much closer to punk pop, though it's a bit more intricate. An ever-evolving, unmatched longevity is always good to bullet point on your genre's legacy. So mark it down on your diary, because this week, Formidable Opponents discusses and debates Best Emo Song. We are joined by three guys who still currently shop at the local Hot Topic. Bob, Joseph, and Joe Michael, how are you guys doing?
Is that place still even open?
It's because they have stretch to fit.
So, guys, how are we doing this week? Let's do a quick check-in.
I'm happy.
I'm happy. I'm
happy. That's what current. I thought I heard something.
It was the ghost of Joseph past coming to haunt you because you're talking emo.
Yeah, I guess so. No, it's good, man. Nice break. Come back from a Super Bowl that I was happy with the outcome. So can't complain, man.
Yeah, just got back from the beach. Got a nice sunburn / tan. Feels good. I'm a little nasally because I have some allergies. I know Randy's going through the same kind of thing. So it just probably sound like I'm in a part of an emo band, so it works out pretty well. Joe Michael, the man.
Yeah, we got our friend. Doing, welcome brother? Back. If y'all know.
So let's give Joe Michael the formal welcome. Joe Michael, now part of the Formidable Opponents Two-Timers Club. Five times, and we send you a free bumper sticker. Anyway, last time our guest, Joe Michael, joined us way back in episode 33, Best Guilty Pleasure Song. Pretty much the same topic this week, Joe Michael. He is the closest thing we have to a content expert because Davey Havoc canceled on us. Anyway, Joe Michael, we know you're doing amazing now, beautiful family, successful business, but in the early 2000s, you were a guy who experienced a lot of limerence, unrequited love, a lot of girls saying they had fun on your friend's date, ending the night with a lot of ass-out hugs, concluding with some pillow tears. In other words, you not only know emo, you've lived it. Tell us about what emo music lives.
That is why they call me the original emo kid.
tell us what emo means to you, Joe Michael.
I thought we were going to talk about the sociological constructs of society today, not emo music. it really was like, I mean, the zeitgeist of the time, as you talked about in previous episodes and stuff. That's really what it was. It's like, you know, think of your definitive formative years, you know, like you're probably like, I don't know, 14 or 15. And then
shit, Randy was 30.
I mean, see, in my day,
so we're all the lead singers in those bands,
right?
Couldn't tell without the wristbands.
I'm a millennial, and one thing that really affected, I think, all millennials was, of course, 9/11. And I'm using that as a pinpoint, and I'll explain later for emo music, because there was such a huge push right after 9/11 of emo music. Because first you had grunge music that was really in the 90s, and then you had alternative rock that was kind of emerging at that time. And then it's like, man, you have all these kids at that time, they couldn't really, you know, they had all this angst and pin up like anger and stuff. And then, oh man, we're all sad now. And that's kind of what happened. We really didn't know what the heck was going on. We were trying to make sense of everything. And hey, here comes emo music. That's that. I really think that's that's what shifted the culture at that time.
You know, many of us have gone through an emo phase. Joe Michael, I know you have. Bob and Joseph, I think you just slapped the school books out of the emo kids' hands in the hallway. But what, but did you guys grow up listening to emo music as well? What are your thoughts on that, Bob and Joseph?
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, like, it was a 2000, so we had a lot of different types of rock music going on, a big change in the rock music scene. I think we've talked a lot about it. Joseph's favorite. What do they call your favorite brand of 2000s metal, Joseph?
New metal.
New metal. Joseph, he doesn't like that damn phrase. But I mean, we had new metal. We had a lot of alternative. We had a lot of cool bands. We had emo coming up real big. You know, all the girls that we liked were into those songs. So we had to listen to that shit. If we were on a date or just hanging out. And, you know, so it's something we're around. It reminds me of high school rock music. So, you know, it's pretty near and dear to us because, like, when we think of high school music, this is part of it. You know what I mean? As funny as it is, or as crazy as it is, as bad or as good as it might be, you know, it's a part of our high school year. So, you know, we roll with it.
My favorite type of music in high school is our conflicting ideas between the two genres. but you know, like Bob said, there's no denying it. That was another thing too. I mean, it was very, very, popular among girls at the time. And if you wanted to go out on a date with a girl, you kind of had to maybe play some of their music. Otherwise, they're not going to want to ride in your vehicle. This music for me, it doesn't mean much. I mean, I'm not going to say, I can't really give. And it's no disrespect to Joe Michael, because this is like his holy grail of music, supposedly. And I'll talk about this when I get into when we talk later about how I feel about it now and going back and listening to these songs. There are some good songs there and more, you know, ones that stand out more than the others. And that's what we're here to talk about. That's what we're going to talk about, these particular songs. But other than that, it didn't really have too much an effect on me because at the time, because I was listening to something. I was so into something else that was completely different. Although those songs, some of them, you know, in new metal bands did their own, like, I don't want to call them ballads, but, you know, songs that were...
They were all ballads.
You know, it's like two clicks that just didn't get along. And Randy, please do not paint us to be... What's the word or term I'm looking for? Disrespectful and rude jocks. Yeah, like, we loved everybody.
The jocks were the, I know, jocks, we're like, oh, the 80s movies.
Geek.
Joseph wore JNCOs and Metallica shirts, and you're calling him.
Yeah. Although I did play sports. I was very much, you know, yeah. I was a sports fan, you know. But I had my own style. Ways. I like my own music. And we loved Adina everybody.
Shows. Joe Michael, did you go through an emo phase in high school? Were you?
Oh, yeah.
But tell us about
definitely.
It.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, it was kind of like, it was funny because, like, you were saying, like, I didn't know what group to fit in at the time. You know, I really didn't, you know, every high school has like cliques. I mean, it's not like that anymore. Gen Z really changed all that up, but you can still find like your jocks and whatnot. But at the time it was, okay, I was labeled as a nerd, but I really didn't fit in with the nerds. I didn't go to band. I didn't talk about band. I didn't quite understand any of that stuff. So I gravitated to people like Joseph. I was hanging out with the metalheads and the punk dudes and the goth kids and all that kind of stuff, because that just made sense to me. And I really got into that music scene because that just kind of resonated with me, because I liked rock music at the time. I liked alternative, and like, oh, this sounds pretty cool. So I just kind of started gravitating towards that, and then I got into this whole emo phase with these scene kids and stuff at the time.
So I know my wife has shared memories of her emo phase. Some people think it's when she married me. Actually, this is not the first time we talked about emo. We had Jenna and Danielle from the Did Not Need to Know podcast a few episodes back in October. And Jenna talked about her emo phase where she'd listen to the music. She would listen to this music, lie on a trampoline outside, look at the stars and pray that one of the Madden twins from Good Charlotte, she didn't care which one, would rescue her away from a life of pre-calculus and cotillion formals. So shout out to Jenna. She was an emo kid as well.
Yeah, that was way more emo than me.
I mean, they got Cameron Diaz.
You should have got her.
And Richie's daughter, so Nicole Richie. So they've done pretty well for themselves.
By the way, guys, quick message before we continue our opening questions. We want to make clear that the jokes we are making tonight are about the over-the-top corny and whiny lyrics and aesthetics of emo. We won't be joking about the serious stuff, suicide, depression, self-harm, and abuse. If you are experiencing any of these or any relating issues to this, there is help. Please go out and get it. Talk to a therapist, a counselor, a family member. Help is also available by picking up the phone and dialing 988. for the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. So please, that is 988. And Joe Michael, you told me that this was an important message to get across for this episode. You mentioned on an email that there were a few emo songs that have been blamed for depression and suicide. You referenced Blink-182's Adam song, My Chemical Romance lyrics, Hawthorne Heights lyrics, and as a genre as a whole. Can you expand on this and why you wanted to get this message across?
When I was starting my research, I was reading some of the lyrics. And I was like, oh, well there it is. Like, we'll talk about Hawthorne Heights a little bit later, but Ohio Is for Lovers was going to be my pick for tonight. And just like the opening lyrics of that, or the chorus is like, black my eyes and cut my wrists. I was like, whoa, dude. It's really like this music really was, I guess, favored by these group of people that just wanted to self-harm themselves. They just didn't know how to get their emotions out. So they would listen to this. And I know Blink-182's Adam song was linked to a few suicides when it was released. And man, it's like, you're right. Like, hey, if you're going through something, there is help. I mean, I'm a big advocate for therapists and counselors and psychiatrists if needed. But yeah, some of the lyrics on here really kind of like, whoa, dude, they really were kind of dark and beyond emo. And I was like, dude, all right. So
I think they kind of catch you off guard, because when you look at the grunge era, you know, a lot of the music was pretty down to the dumps and depressing. And these guys were, I mean, really, really bad shape. I mean, look at how many of our favorite singers of the grunge era died of overdoses and stuff like that. I think people get, it can kind of get lost in translation with emo music, because emo music's kind of upbeat. The lyrics are not upbeat, and you know, the message they're getting across is definitely not upbeat, but a lot of the music is upbeat, and it's like the 80s, you know, glam music met with, you know, grunge, and kind of mixed it together, and that's what came up with emo music. So I get y'all's point in you trying to get that message across. Again, all in good fun. This is about fun out there, different style of rock music from our high school year. Our high school, not sorry, Rand. Your Rand was probably.
Yours. I was total hold the line and all that other stuff.
Sorry. Yeah, he'll tell you he was working on his dissertation at this time.
I was.
You all said y'all listen to emo music to get chicks. What type of girls were
not,
they?
Okay.
Not to get chicks. We have the chicks.
No.
Okay, by the way, what does emo music mean to me? It means that my high school girlfriend just dumped me and took me out of her top five on MySpace. That's exactly what it means. I'm listening to this shit.
It wasn't.
Yeah,
no,
it wasn't. Yeah, tell Joseph. It wasn't.
No, it was like Bob said. Yeah, it was. It's like I mentioned earlier. It was a very, very.
With the lip ring and mascara to fucking get a girl at a party.
It was a very popular genre of music. It was like, it was huge. It was this huge explosion of you know, emo bands or quote unquote emo bands. I think you know, there's some bands that get lumped into this, or like songs, and I don't want to take anything away from what you said about Adam's song, Joe Michael. I don't consider that an emo song, because it's from a punk band, a pop punk band. And I think there's, I don't know, like, there was songs that I was, we'll get into this later. I mean, what was the question? this is going into a whole other discussion.
Chicks, man.
That's what I was like.
Let me go back to what I was saying. It was a very popular genre of music. A lot of these dudes, or bands, I'm sorry, I don't mean dudes. A lot of these bands were singing these very emotional songs, and a lot of them, I think, were about relationships and whatnot. And some of them were, I mean, they're clearly better looking than we are, because we all, you know, they were out on stage and we were not. And, you know, the girls loved them. We can't, you know, it would have been rude to take, like, especially for me, it was a freaking metalhead. Not every girl that I dated in high school was into the music that I was into. So I didn't want to scare them away by, you know, putting on Cannibal Corpse or something. So you got to play with, you know, you got to
listen to the,
you got
to
keep them entertained. You got to, you know, you're going to take a girl out on a date, at least, you know, play some music that they're into, you know, don't scare them away, and kind of ease them into, like, you know, hey, if you like that song, maybe I like this song. So, you know, you just, yeah, Incubus, you just being a courteous person, a courteous gentleman, and then letting your date enjoy their favorite type of music.
We couldn't be in an emo band, Joseph. None of us weigh under 130 pounds. So I mean, emo music has often
just
been
a few credit shorts.
Emo music has often been ridiculed for decades. And what makes 2000 emo music the target of jokes and ridicule? Why do a lot of people? You see a lot of movies parody it. A lot of TV shows. Why is it the target of ridicule?
It's the theatrics, dude. I think that's what it was. Like, it was way over the top. And, you know, in the 80s, it worked because everybody's on cocaine, Randy's favorite cocaine. 80s, it worked because it was all glam metal, and who could do it worse? And this is exactly the same shit, but the difference between 80s glam metal and this emo shit was that emo was kind of depressing, man. They were all singing about getting their hearts broken. When the guys in the 80s, the people in the 80s rock bands were singing about going out and partying and screwing whoever they can get their hands on. So I think that's what it was, like, all the theatrics and glam of 80s music, but also depressing as shit.
I'm going to go with Bob. I really do think it's a mascara. I mean, I don't...
eyeliner.
And the eyeliner.
They had both.
Okay. Yeah, they had everything, man. And it's funny. I went to a few of these shows, and I mean, I'm going to go into this later, man, but I guess we can talk about it right now. I think because, you know, record companies are like, okay, cool. This is the look we want to go for. So then everybody started doing that exact same look, and then Hot Topic blew up because of that. And I think that's why
Hot Topic.
That's why it's so funny. It's like, what's going on? What is this?
Hot Topic was making a killing back in the days.
Oh, the band shirts, and it wasn't like, we don't have to sell Metallica band shirts and Iron Maiden anymore. We can sell XYZ.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. Broken record here, but I'd have to agree. And it was mainly that it was the overtly emo fashion. I think that's what gets the most jokes. But as you know, as we all learned from doing, you know, the research for this, they didn't all dress like that. But the ones that basically
that were successful did.
You know, the ones that did, the ones that get the image of emo, or the one that gets the jokes, took basically from the goth kids and just added, you know, highlighter green, highlighter blue, and highlighter pink to their hairstyles. And I think that's what it is. I think that's where the jokes come from. And by the way, there's a hilarious episode of South Park where the goths are fighting the emos and the vamps. It's just like, oh no, the emos are trying to take over and the goths get, you know, help from the vamps. It's hilarious episode anyway.
So death and despair. why did this music genre resonate with so many young people during the turn of the millennium? It became more mainstream than it was alternative. Why did it resonate with people, guys?
I really don't know. I mean, I to be honest with you, at least for me, I think maybe relationships felt more difficult back then somehow for some reason and complicated, and which I don't know.
Relationships. She's on AOL. She's signing AOL, but she hasn't messaged me yet.
Joe Michael gave a nice little mention of, you know, the time that we were living in and what he, you know, he mentioned the 9/11. I'll leave it at that. But I don't know. I think it's more the relationship aspect, which I think, because I think we were living in at least the 2000s were generally like good times, happy times. I mean, I don't think we had any real major issues at the time other than what was out of, you know, our control. But, you know, what do you think, guys?
I think that the 80s were pretty loud and, you know, out there, and people were like, who gives a shit? Let's party. The 90s, everybody kind of quieted the fuck down, and, you know, it was kind of grunge, just kind of depressing, man. But everybody was quiet and solemn and kind of to themselves. Seattle rock was this huge, huge thing at the time. You know, everybody, you know, kept to themselves. It was like the quiet. Everybody was so, like, everybody loved Kurt Cobain, and he was just such a guy, like, everybody found so interesting because he was so, like, reserved and quiet and soft-spoken. And I think that, but of course, breakups and shit happened in the 80s, but everybody was partying, so they didn't give a shit. You know, breakups happened in the 90s. Everybody was so quiet and solemn to themselves, they kept it in. In the 2000s, I think everybody was tired. Teens were tired of going home and crying in their pillow at night and just staying home alone. They just wanted to go outside and put on a fancy outfit and scream in front of everybody while they, I don't know. But I think that's what it is, man. I think it's just... it's the 80s reinvented, and I think it was just a big everybody wanted to be out and about and outlandish about everything, because it was like the look at me movement. And I've talked about this before. We're living in that, like, kind of Twitter, look at me, look at me, look at me, look at my response, look at my quote, look at my pictures. I think it started in 2000s because of AOL and because of AIM, like, oh, now I can talk to everybody. Now everybody can see my MySpace page. Now look at me, look what I did to my page, look at me. So I think that this is part of that. You know what I mean?
It's like as a teenager, now you got to deal with girlfriends, and then you got to deal with heartbreak, and then you don't know how to put that into words, and then you get these guys making these songs like, oh well, that makes a little bit more sense now. And and then I'm gonna go ahead and throw it out there for Eternal Millennials, because I know they used to watch this channel a lot, because they mentioned in one of y'all's episode about Much Music USA, or Much Music turned into Fuse, and when it turned into Fuse, they were just playing nothing but emo music on that. A lot of scene music too on there, and that was huge for me, because I was tired of MTV. You know, me as you know, like I'm looking for more of the rock stuff. I'm looking for more of the alt stuff. Fuse came online on the air, and they had this different outlet that was not MTV. It was more indie. It was different, it really resonated. Of course, like y'all labeled me as the original emo kid, but I mean that's really. I was like,
that's all Randy, bro. Don't blame us.
I think all right.
I knew you as a teenager, Joe Michael. So.
That's true, actually. I knew you. You couldn't understand.
That's so true. But yeah,
we're a lot of black.
And then let's go back to MySpace real quick. So MySpace was all about music when it first created. And this music, this emo music, was very different, very like under the radar. And I think MySpace was a huge push for this music, because you could really like do some research and start following bands and start. I remember my MySpace page was mainly music. I really used it for the music aspect, because I was learning about bands I never heard of. And I thought it was awesome. Another thing that came from Canada, which was also very apparent in the U.S., there was a show called Radio Free Roscoe, and it was about these high school kids. Same kind of thing. They're dealing with angst, dealing with all this teenage stuff, and they didn't like what they're hearing on the radio. They didn't like the school radio, so they made their own radio station to be indie, and they were playing alternative music and whatnot, which is kind of what Fuse was for, I guess, scene and emo kids. It was different, and all I could think of was like when I was going to college. There was a radio station that was college led, and on Sunday nights, they would play heavy metal. And that's how I got into metal, dude, because I was listening to the Sunday night, listening to Mon Amarth and all this stuff on college radio.
So I want to ask you guys, we got two last quick questions. I want to ask you guys, is emo music making a comeback? Joe Michael, you posed this question. How is it making a comeback, or is it making a comeback?
I don't think it is. I mean, people are saying it is, because My Chemical Romance has a new album coming out. Paramore is on tour right now with new music, but I heard Paramore's new music, and it doesn't fit the genre. It's more like, hey, they grew up and they're experimenting,
and they made money.
They made money, and that's something you'll see with all these bands that we'll talk about here in a minute. Is they knew what was hot at the time. Blink-182 knew that they jumped in there with their own emo song, and it was a hit, but they stayed more punk. They didn't go like they stuck to what they know. And other bands that were started off as emo, I think they just got older, and they did some really good music. A band that we could talk about is Thrice. Their latest album is just unbelievably awesome, and it's not even emo. It's more on the rock side.
The last question, guys: what is the most ridiculous, funniest, or what is the funniest emo aesthetic?
You brought it up earlier, this guy's name, and I'll mention him just a bit. The Cadenate plus 8 dyed black hairdo. Like, what the fuck was up with that? The covering one eye with their bangs, the I may speak to your manager type of fucking emo haircut. What the fuck was up with that, man? Davey Havoc of AFI is the, if y'all don't know who that is, Google him right now, AFI, Davey Havoc. You'll see exactly what kind of hairdo I'm talking about. It was unnecessary. They already had enough theatrics as it was.
But his hair was everything. Phenomenal.
And what the fuck was that?
His hair is still phenomenal.
What about you, Joseph? Anything that sticks out, fashion-wise?
Yeah, it's that, dude. It's the hair, and for me, the quote unquote, the lip ring. Now, the hair and the definitive emo voice. Like, we see a lot of that one meme on Instagram. I don't know this. I don't know if it's a real song, but like somebody's always whenever they try to make like an emo meme of somebody like or an animal with like hair covering their eye, they do that one song.
Like
I don't
alpaca,
know if it's a real song.
Yeah.
But I when I say definitive emo voice, I think of like the dude from Panic at the Disco. Like when that's the voice that for some reason like that guy's voice is like that's emo. You sound like that guy, then that's emo. At least the quote-unquote
goddamn door, Joseph.
They closed up shop. So yeah, somebody did shut the damn door.
What about you, Joe Mike? Is there an aesthetic, style, fashion that sticks out to you?
I always think of Peter Parker, Tobey Maguire's Peter Parker, when he went through that emo phase of just, and he's pulling his hair in front of his face. And he's, I always think of that, like, yeah, that's so emo.
To me, it's always that satanic,
it's always the darkness.
It's always that satanic Olive Garden server look with the black shirt and black slacks with the red tie. I mean, I think maybe only My Chemical Romance, but yeah, but I feel like every band did that at some point. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's me. So, guys, let's go ahead and go to our honorable mentions. Joe Michael, we'll hit you up first. What are some of your honorable mentions?
Oh, man, I had a long list, and I was like, I really got to cut it back. Top of my list, I have Until the Day I Die by Story of the Year, Misery Business by Paramore, Devotion and Desire by Bayside. And talk about an emo band. Bayside's pretty emo. Cute Without the E by Taking Back Sunday. Mm-hmm. Those guys are pretty emo, too.
These are the best songs, right?
What's that?
These are the best emo songs, right?
No, these are my honorable mentions. They really are the best ones, honestly. Quiet Things That No One Ever Knows by Brand New. I Miss You by Blink-182. That one people still sing to this day. Note to Self by First to Last. And fun fact, Skrillex was actually like doing vocals on this band. So this is where Skrillex got his jump start. The Truth About Heaven from Armored for Sleep. And this one's really emo from the UK. It's Streetcar Funeral for a Friend. Great band. If you haven't,
the name sounds familiar.
Oh yeah, they're great. My wife used to. Fun fact: she used to work at Warped Tour, and So I asked her, "Hey, give me your picks for the best emo songs." And she said, "Kiss Me Deadly" by Generation X from Billy Idol's on Generation X. And I was like, "How is that so?" She's like, just punk rock and, being sad and stuff. And like the guy got, stabbed by a knife. So that's pretty sad. I was like, oh, okay, cool. And Plain White Tees, Hey There, Delilah. She's like, everybody. So talking about like, Bob saying, like, yeah, we do this for the girls. Man, you're in high school, you want to learn guitar and you want to like, get girls. You got to, you play Hey There, Delilah. And a buddy of mine who was in an emo band way back in the day, his name's Dev.
What was their name?
No, it's a dude. What are you talking about?
What was the name of the band?
Yeah.
Oh.
What was their name?
Was it I Hate My Stepfather Todd? Was that the name of the band?
Oh, no. I honestly don't know the name of the band. But his name is Dev Wolf, and he's with Texarkana now, Midnight Howl. And he's like, dude, the best emo song of all time is Finch, What It Is to Burn, that song. And I'm like, yeah.
Okay. That's a great, great song.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent. Bob, what about you? What are your honorable mentions?
What It Is to Burn is a great, great song. It's kind of, I don't know if it's, I would call it more alternative, but there's a pretty fine line between. Let's go with Fall Out Boy's Sugar We're Going Down Swinging. My Chemical Romance's Ghost of You. And then, Rand, we had talked about this earlier this week because I don't think it's an emo song, but you think it is. Jimmy Eat World the Middle. What do y'all think about that? You think that's emo? You think that's just alternative? What do you think about that, guys?
Can I make a point? And then, Joseph and Joe Michael, you could chime in. So, I don't want to step on my honorable mentions, but I did have several Jimmy Eat World songs on there. I think they're a cornerstone emo band. Bleed American is entirely emo. I read a great article by Mark McConville on IamTunedUp.com. He talked about how Bleed American was the album that drove emo through the motions, giving it a chance to revitalize its prominence.
What is a 45-year-old man writing an article know about emo music?
Gave them a platform to express themselves further. Bleed American, it garnered many new fans, and from many singles were released. They were about emotional entanglement, struggle, misfortune. I mean, struggles and misfortune mixed with pop punk, catchy yet heart-wrenching lyrics. Definitely 100% emo. Now, I will say this. You know how when some Hispanic people go on diets, they switch from flour to corn tortilla, thinking that it's different or better for them? Jimmy Eat World is like the corn tortilla of emo punk. I think they fool some people into liking them and having those people legitimize it as pure punk, but it's emo all the way. What do you guys think about that?
The middle's an uplifting song, though.
Have you heard the demo? The demo is very different from the
You know what's an uplifting song? That Harry Styles song right now. As it was.
Don't mention Harry Styles.
Look at the lyrics, dude. The lyrics are pretty depressing.
Well, only one song sounds like Pink Floyd. Anyway, go, Joe Michael.
No.
We'll talk about that some other. It's not a Harry Styles pod. So, Joe Michael, your thoughts on Jimmy Eat World?
Thank God.
I have to agree with you because they were a cornerstone of emo today. They actually inspired bands like Paramore, and they're pretty much like the icons that we talked about earlier of emo at the time. And I mean, if you listen to old Weezer stuff, like Weezer, the Pinkerton album, that's got emo lyrics in it all in it.
Ah, I got it as a.
Now we're gonna say Metallica's emo because nothing else matters. Yeah, damn it. Here we go.
What about you, Jose? Anything to chime in on this
about Jimmy World?
Yeah,
I don't know anything about them. I mean, I know that one song, and it didn't sound emo to me. It sounded kind of uplift. The middle, right? Is that one about yes, take some time? You know. That one?
But right? Fucking party, man. They're partying.
That one, right? That's the one we're talking about?
That's the one, yes.
Everything will be all right. Everything will be just fine.
Yeah, I got no emo vibe from that. So I really have never known them. I mean, the fact that you all say that they're cornerstones is
that's one song though. You got to listen to the entire album.
No, but I didn't like that one song, so I don't want to listen to any other songs.
But I wasn't talking about the band. I was talking about that one song, The Middle. Would that be considered? A lot of people had The Middle on their list as one of the best emo songs of all time. I don't consider that song specifically an emo song.
And maybe we can discuss it. We can discuss this at the end. There's a because you missed some. I think Randy just said emo punk. There's a fine line between, at least I think, like the shit that Green Day was doing later on. That's emo. Like they were punk. They were punk. And then they were pop punk. Like Blink 182, pop punk. And some of these bands are getting lumped into the emo thing. I didn't really think Good Charlotte was emo. I thought they were a punk band, a pop punk band. So we could talk about that later though. But you know, I think there's a dividing line in that shit. Anyway.
Yeah. No, I agree 100%. That's a good discussion.
Rand just wants to be all inclusive.
honorable mentions, Joseph.
I don't have too many. This is actually a surprise to me. When I was looking up songs myself, I actually like this song. And this, can't say the band, but good song. Understanding in a Car Crash by Thursday. I didn't know that was considered an emo band, but I do like that song. Miss Murder and the Leaving Song Part 2 by AFI. I actually think those are good songs. I know that they give off that, you know, emo vibe by their look. So I think those two fall into this category for sure. I did even write Ohio's for Lovers, even though I didn't really know that song too well. I had to be reminded of it. So I had to listen to it a few times. So I was like, oh yeah, this song. I was like, it was very popular. Yeah. So anyway, I did include it. Another one too, like Coheed and Cambria. I didn't know they were considered emo, but I think A Favor House Atlantic is a good song. And of course I had Finch, What It's Like to Burn as well. I think that's a huge song and probably one of the most recognized of this genre, I guess.
Coheed and Cambria, that's the guy that sounds like Geddy Lee from Rush.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, okay. He's got that vibe.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I remember when I first saw that video real quick, like I did not expect that voice to come out of him.
I know. It's emo Rush. It's all it is. So my honorable mentions, I had to go back to a time where musicians at least looked like they were made up by Tim Burton. So I had to talk a little bit about the grandfathers of emo. I had to talk about The Cure and Love Song, Morrissey with Suedehead, Sunny Day Real Estate in Circles. I did list Joe Michael, Pink Triangle by Weezer, not a traditional emo band, but they had a lot of emo cuts, right? Face Down by Red Jumpsuit Apparatus, I Will Follow You in the Dark by Death Cab for Cutie, Girls Not Grey, AFI. I have The Downfall of Us All by A Day to Remember, Phoebe Cates by Phoenix, Texas, The Black Parade by My Chemical Romance, also I'm Not Okay. I had Cute Without the E by Taking Back Sunday. I thought it was interesting and super whiny. Accident Prone by Jawbreaker. And then last, I had Jimmy Eat World, A Praise Chorus, Sweetness, The Middle. All emo. Anyway, let's go on
lot of songs, man. We're talking about the best emo. So y'all named a shitload of songs. You sure you don't have your mascara eyeliner somewhere lying around there?
We're going to put them all in an album. All right, so we're going to go ahead with our selections. Joe Michael, you're up first. What you got for us?
I could not decide between Hawthorne Heights, Ohio's for Lovers, because that song to me defines emo, just the whole vibe and everything about it. And I was like, this is going to be the song. And after doing some research, because like we're picking the best, right? We're picking the goat, because it's three guys and a goat, right? So we're picking the goat. I had to go with Helena from My Chemical Romance. And the only reason I chose that song is because, like we're talking about, that song broke the roof of the rock that emo music was hiding under. And then you got like guys like Green Day buying into it, wearing the red ties, just like My Chemical Romance was doing at the time. And it's all about, man, they signed a good record deal with Reprise Records at the time, which is owned by Warner Brothers, I believe. And they really like, okay, cool. This is the image of the music we're going to put out. This is where we're going. This is it. And then you had all these other bands starting to copy what MCR was doing at the time. And Hot Topic was making millions at the time too. But going to the song as a whole, it was like I was saying, it was the first song to make it on the hit, like Billboard Hot 100. I think it charted at number 33 at the time. And that's what really broke the ceiling up for emo music. The lyrics, I mean, the song's about Gerard Way's grandmother passing away. And it's a lot of like hateful lyrics about himself, like man, I really missed out. That's kind of like the tone and what he was really trying to get across the song. Like, I missed out in saying goodbye to my grandmother. And, you know, thinking at like it, me as a teenager at the time, like it really resonated with me because, yeah, we're going through heartbreak and all this other stuff, which is the core of emo as a whole. And man, what's more heartbreaking than losing your own grandmother? And it really set the stage of like, man, I really can understand this guy, what he's going through in these lyrics about, man, you're like, you know, saying that like we're here and we're still burning for you kind of a thing, man. It just the way he sings in that song too is like he's got the tone right off the bat, just like that whisper kind of like sad vibe to it, and then he just goes in like quiet loud kind of a thing. And yeah, I'm gonna stick with that, man, because I'm just like, I think that's probably the best emo song.
So a great pick, Joe Michael. This song reminds me of like they'd have the potential of being a great satanic metal band if they didn't grow up going to private schools. What do you agree, Joseph? So the best YouTube comment I read, some guy wrote 2009 crying quietly so my parents don't hear me, 2019 crying quietly so my children don't hear me when he's listening to this song. In the video, that had to be a fake casket, because in the video they're carrying a casket down steps. There's no way that these six guys could carry
it's
a real
shame, sir. It's a dance down. You watch it. They're not carrying shit. They're dancing with style.
There's no way these six guys could carry a real casket over their collective heads. They'd complain about their collarbones right afterwards and write a song about how they hate the dead person who put them through this newfound physical pain. So anyway, Gerard, is that the way? Am I saying that right? Gerard Way.
I don't know, but he looks like the lead singer of Smashing Pumpkins, kid.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I kind of got
it's like, yeah. What's the name of the wig?
Yeah.
Gerard Way wrote this song about the death of his grandmother, as you mentioned. Don't you think she would have been just fine with a nice cover of Amazing Grace or How Great Thou Art? I don't know. That's just me. I mean, you know, my grandma died. Let me try my hand at speed metal. All right, whatever. Okay. You can't hate Gerard Way, though. He went from looking like Edward Scissorhands in his 30s to looking like your run-of-the-mill Texas high school football coach in his 40s. He's got the punchy gut and the stubble. He doesn't care anymore. He's making money. It's hard to be one of the biggest emo bands in the world and not spend your money on delicious foods. And he's raking it in, right? Great. I don't have a lot of bad things to say about this song. It helps people cope with anger, loss, death, and it shows us what Green Day's kids would look like at their prom. It's a top three, Joe Michael. Good on you, man. What do you say, Bob? I was trying to read the comments to see who's going next.
Yeah, no, I got it. Kind of went good. Very cool music video, that funeral scene in the church. Again, emo is very theatrical and in a good way. I think that's one of the ways it appeals to fans. It's very theatrical. I thought the music video was amazing. Wade Phillips, congrats on the big Houston Roughnecks win last night. His granddaughter actually was the ballerina in this music video. Wade Phillips is a big deal here in Houston, the Phillips here in Texas, the Phillips family. So cool little fact about his granddaughter being in the music video. The main girl in the casket and dancing ballet. Pretty cool. The lead singer, you got it right, dude. He's the perfect emo singer. He's got that whiny voice. He's got the mascara, the black around his eyes. Like, he's attending some gothic prom, but it's lame. Everything's lame. You know, he swears that I don't get the in-sync dancing that goes along with the music video. And I think that's what holds it back, because as depressing as it is, you know, there's people there watching and like crying. They're like, why the fuck are they dancing at a funeral? So I think that holds it back from being the top emo song of all time, but that's just me. If it was me and I was choosing My Chemical Romance, The Ghost of You is their best song, bar none. If you hear that song, if you watch that video, that is their best rock song, emo song, whatever fucking song you want to call it, whatever label you want to slap on it. That is their best song by far. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It's one of my favorites.
I think this is a very strong pick, bro, and you're probably going to get a lot of people that are going to agree with you on this. When you think of My Chemical Romance, this is their defining song, I believe. I really do think that. I don't know how many songs from them. I don't know too many songs from them. I know maybe three. This is one. The Black Parade song is another one, which everybody seems to make fun of, and rightfully so, because it's stupid and terrible. And The Ghost of You, like Bob mentioned, which I'll talk about just a little bit. This, you know, The Ghost of You is a good song, like Bob said. And when this topic was brought up, I thought about this song. I thought about The Ghost of You. I did. I didn't say it in the honorable mentions because I kind of didn't want to. I don't know. For some reason, I wanted to like not mention a band that somebody was picking. But anyway, but it is in the honorable mentions for me, most definitely. At least I don't think I didn't mention him. I didn't write him down. So I don't hate his voice. You know, when he writes songs like this, when he writes songs like this and The Ghost of You, I think he doesn't have a terrible voice. I think, like Bob said, he's very... definitely the poster boy. He's got that poster boy look for it. He seems like a cool dude, talented artist and writer, as we know.
Umbrella Academy.
Yes. You know, he seems like a really cool dude. I know he's been, you know, they've been chilling for a while. And like you mentioned, they've recently got back together. And I did hear this song because I was looking up the videos because I was like, how many of these songs do I actually know from them? And I saw that Foundations of Decay video, which is not really a video. And I was like, I didn't know any, I'd never heard of it. And I listened to it and it said it was released recently. I was like, oh shit, so it's new. It didn't sound like them. It sounded something like different. It really did. I'm not gonna lie. I was like, you know what? This sounds more like of a hard alternative rock band. And maybe it's, I didn't say this earlier when you mentioned, when the question was asked whether emo is coming back, I don't think it's coming back. I just think that everybody grew up. And so they're writing different music, or they're writing, you know, the music's not necessarily the same. It's cool if you were a fan of them to see them perform those old songs. So that's great. Sum all this up. I'm sorry. I know there's a lot. I think it's the strongest pick and the most recognized and most, you know, selected. But like Bob, I think The Ghost of You is just an amazing song. But we talked about that. We were like, The Ghost of You doesn't sound like an emo song to me. It just sounds like a really good fucking rock song, really good ballad. So that would have been my pick too. I did think about that. Great selection, dude. I mean, really, it's probably going to be the most recognized because of that guy's look.
yeah. He was a poster boy for Hot Topic for sure. And the music video, it's funny because it's like we all know it's about his grandmother, but the label really wanted to push, no, we just take advantage and really push like your girlfriend is in the coffin. And I'm like, no, dude, that's not. So I'm kind of like, you know, it's really funny seeing how the man really wants to like twist the narrative and like change and like really put like in front, like get something moving.
Grandmothers don't sell albums to teens, you know. Hot girlfriends.
That's a Dolly Parton.
So we'll go on with my selection. Good pick, Joe Michael. We'll go on with my selection. I picked Vindicated by Dashboard Confessional. 3 minutes and 21 seconds of sadness. So Dashboard Confessional leader Chris Carrabba wrote this song for the Spider-Man 2 soundtrack. He loves comic books, so he agreed to write the song as long as he could see the movie before it was released. The Spider-Man movies. I mean, what a great track record commissioning singers for their soundtrack. Nickelback, Saliva, and Dashboard Confessional. What a trifecta. Okay. Cannabis. Anyway, I think that this is the Spider-Man where Peter Parker goes emo and looks like an insane Mark Cuban. I think so. Anyway, no. Carrabba also wrote this song in an hour, just a beautifully confusing, whiny song. If I had hair, I'd grow it out just to swoop it out of my face and listen to the song over and over. You hear the opening drag of the guitar, and I swear, seconds later, you hear it. You hear the guitar whining just like the singer. The lead singer painfully whispers his lyrics, and for no reason, he starts to whine, shouting his anger, his indiscretions, his flaws, his mistakes. I mean, 100%. Emo. We don't know where he's going with this. I am wrong. I am right. He doesn't know. He's a confused teenager.
We don't know what he's pissed off at. Did he get appointed to a group project at school? Did the cafeteria run out of chocolate milk? Did the librarian not let him take the school's copy of Paste magazine home? Did somebody compliment his skinny jeans and silver belt combo? We don't know why he's upset. The thing is, this scratches that pop punk whiny 2000s itch. It's got both the cheese and the wine, which is great. It's fantastic. The singer sounds like he got his book slapped out of his hands, like by you and Joseph Bob. Anyway, the biggest point is that it's performed like the fate of the band's joy hinges on its audience knowing how confused and how emo they are. You can't beat that. So Let Me Slip Away is what I'm saying, because I think this song is incredibly whiny. I think that's what a good emo song does. It's whiny, it's confusing, but it sounds good, and you just get addicted to it for whatever reason why. I like to play this song. I like to listen to it because I think it's just fantastic. What do you guys think?
I'm not objecting to your choice in artists. I object to the song choice.
Thank you.
Really, of all the songs you could have picked from this band, and this is it's band, but it's mainly the one dude. And this is the complete opposite of, you know, the singer from My Chemical Romance and AFI. This is a different, you know, look for emo. But of all the songs you could have picked from them, you go with the one of the most known emo bands. You go with Vindicated, the Spider-Man 2 soundtrack song. I don't know why. You could have gone with Screaming Infidelities, probably their most well-known song, or The Best Deceptions, or Hands Down. I would have said great pick if you had chosen one of those.
What?
that's, you know, I mean, if you had literally, I fully expected you to pick Screaming Infidelities. I'm not gonna lie, but you chose this one, and I'm not telling you that you're wrong for the selection, because this is another well-known, like, you know, huge emo. When you think emo bands, this band, this guy, this singer songwriter, who's you know, hey, he's a talented singer songwriter. He's a great musician. The music's different. It's not the heavy emo's. I don't want to call them heavy distortion, but I mean, you hear a clear difference in the sound of the instruments. But you picked the wrong song, dude. Like no, of Vindicated, only strictly for the movie. Everybody knows Screaming Infidelities. Everybody knows that fucking line. Your hair. I mean, you could have gone
everywhere
with that one. You know, so I think you picked the wrong song. You really you did.
I swear I'm right. I swear I'm right.
Hope dangles on a string, Randall. Hope dangles on a string. It's getting cut short. Joe Michael, tell him why he's wrong.
All right. It's from Spider-Man 2. And all I could think of is when Peter Parker moved out and got his little apartment, he probably got himself a little, you know, guitar and wrote this song about missing out on Mary Jane. That's all I could think about. Because, like, hope dangles on a string. Like, oh, I'm hanging from this tower in New York City. I'm hope, and I'm dangling from this string. That's all I could think about. I'm going to go with Joseph. I think Screaming Infidelities really is their benchmark of a song. But you swear you're right. As he was swearing to Uncle Ben that he swore he was right too.
Way to work that in.
And then I was thinking like the Let Me Slip Away part. I would just think of him just like sitting in his bed trying to forget about Mary Jane. Like, you know, like in the movie, she like, what did I miss? Did I miss you or something? And he's like, no, let me slip away. Just let me go.
I just don't know how. I agree, dude. You can't. How did you not pick Screaming Infidelities? I was like every emo chick breakup song when I was in high school, dude. Every single one. You chose the most commercial emo song of the 2000s, a fucking Spider-Man 2 soundtrack song. This isn't, I mean, geez, you said Nickelback. Who else did you name? This isn't a good thing, Ren. This isn't a good thing. Emo bands don't sing on soundtracks, okay, bro? They sing it to their girlfriend, okay, or to their pillar, to their mirror, whatever the hell they're doing. I mean, Robert Smith of The Cure right now is shaking his head at you, Ren. He's shaking his fucking head for your choice. Spider-Man 2, are you serious? I do want to mention this: the lead singer, the fucking sideburns on this guy. Great voice. impeccable sideburns. I had my sideburns just like that in high school, so he gets a high five for me. I'll post a picture of that sometime this week. Impeccable sideburns. But your hair is everywhere. Come on, Randall. Jesus Christ, get your head out of your ass.
Let me ask you, just for sake of trivia, you mentioned that they wanted him to write the song as long as he could see the movie. Did he get inspiration? Is the song based from the movie, or is it like, do you know if it's like just, you know, him writing a personal song, or
I think there's a connection.
Because there's that line, the string line that Joe Michael mentioned.
I think he's writing it from the point of view of Peter Parker. I think he saw the because that's when he went emo, right? That was Spider-Man 2 where he was.
I thought it was 3 when he was wearing the black the Venom suit.
Yeah, okay. He got the Venom suit in 3, but in 2 it kind of started because he knew he couldn't get Mary Jane. So he was having that heartbrokenness because Mary Jane's going to marry that astronaut dude or something. So he's like, let me slip away. Just let me go. You know, don't.
He could have had his neighbor's daughter, dude. Come on, man.
So yeah, I think he did write it from the perspective of Peter Parker.
Oh, okay, cool.
And or of a little trivia, a whiny kid, but good arguments, guys. I feel like shit now. Anyway, okay,
great band. Just wrong selection, dude. I think people will agree.
All right, Joseph, you're up next. What do you got for us?
All right, get ready to be brought down, everybody.
We already are.
I know, right? This whole topic. I picked Poetic Tragedy by The Used, okay? It's off of their 2002 self-titled debut, and I know of the other songs from that album, more famously, probably the main single, and I know that Randy is going to use that against me in his rebuttal. I did the same thing to him just right now, so. But from what I gather about the lyrics, the song is about a person, particularly an artist, I believe, struggling to find themselves in the world and not going anywhere. The lyrics are very melancholy and about issues of depression and touch slightly on religion, just a bit. No denying that, and I'm not going to go too into that because I want to talk about the song, okay? And I just think that it's a beautifully written song. The lyrics are very heartfelt. I believe it was written about a person or friend of the singer or person that he knew. I'm not too specific on that. I think I read it, but I don't remember it right now. I like the tempo. A lot of these songs can be a bit sped up, you know, with, you know, the My Chemical Romance stuff, the AFI stuff, a little bit more, Panic at the Disco stuff, a little more, upbeat tempo, specifically Yellow Card. I think that one song, but this one's different, you know, and it just works better for me. He's not a bad singer, most definitely. I think he's a pretty good singer. The chord progression is good and he gets your attention, and I really like that. For me, a heavy music listener, the vocals are enough to get my attention. I did dig the scream vocals mixed with the somewhat heavy chord sections towards the end of the song. I think it just worked beautifully. And I think this covers all the boxes as far as, you know, this genre of music. It's emotional. It's heavy. The lyrics are very personal and deep. And I hope that in writing about this song, I hope that it maybe helped people, you know, after they heard it and listened to it, maybe seek some help if they were feeling that way. And honestly, I just think it, like I said, I just think it's a really great, great song. And this is coming from, like I said, the heavy metal dude. I don't know why this song kind of like touched my soul, but it did. And I could have gone with one of their other songs, one of the, you know, the main single or whatnot, but this one just spoke to me. I just think it's very, very, very beautifully written and perfect for this type of music or this when you talk about this subject. Gentlemen,
who hurt you, Joseph? Who hurt you?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Who hurt you, Joseph? Because that's what I got written down on my notes. I don't know much about The Used, Joseph. So I don't know what song other than.
Neither do I really.
I just know
this song.
Was it The Taste of Ink?
Yes.
Okay, because that's the one song.
That's the main single.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? I don't hate this song. I thought I listened to it. I think it's more important to focus on Who Hurt You, first of all. And then secondly, I do like the quick change up in this song. I thought it was very, the musicianship was good. I know a lot of people, when they listen to emo music, it's about like, wow, it's 3 minutes of whining, or it's 3 minutes of I hate this. But when you listen to the actual instrumentals, sonically, tonally, it's a very intelligent song. I think this would have been Nirvana had they come out 10 years later. If Kurt Cobain didn't do heroin, or if he didn't do Courtney Love, and that's a compliment. I don't know, maybe not. But that's what this band sounded like. They drew a lot of inspiration from Nirvana. That's just a guess. I believe it was featured in the movie The Grind, or Grind, I should say.
Yeah.
This song.
Shout out to Lindy. I think that's your favorite song, favorite movie.
There you go, Grind. This song is one of those. Pretty good movie. Yeah, it's a good movie. I think it's one of those songs that would come out in a teen angst movie where they're kids skateboarding. I mean, that's what it sounds like. Perfect soundtrack. I can see like a slow motion skateboard trick accompanying this. A good roller coaster ride of a song. I thought it was very, it checked all the boxes. Now, do I think it's the best? No, I don't. But I do think that musicianship wise, this was probably the most intelligent song that was out there that anybody selected. So good job. I really don't have any complaints. Joe Michael?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm going to go with the Used, I would have gone with Buried Myself Alive. That to me speaks more.
Wow. Enough,
but yeah. but I was like, when you said it hits me in my soul, I was like, man, I feel bad now for talking smack about this song.
No, bring it on. Bring it on.
It was just one girl.
This is what you're here for. This is what you're here for.
I mean, it is a super sad, like downer song. It really is. I don't know what the story is about the song, but it deals with someone going through substance abuse and stuff. And I'm like, man, this song's and when I heard it, I mean, I bought the album when it first came out, and it was one of those songs that I would hear all the time. But I mean, to me, like, I mean, you guys would know this. Like, sometimes you buy an album, there's a song in there, you just kind of like gloss over a little bit. This was a song that I would gloss over. And then I would play it again just recently, like, okay, let me listen to this song. And I was like, man, that song's such a downer. And then I quickly had to play Buried Myself Alive.
What about Pretty Handsome Awkward? It's another you song. Yeah.
Pretty fly for a white guy. This is fucking high school, man, dude. This is the definition of an emo song, but like a grunge emo song. I think Rand hit it. I don't know if you should mention Nirvana with when we're talking about emo, but yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it with that. Like, this is that kind of song. Like, it's a sad, down in the dumps type of emo song. This is the this is the high school emo song, dude, that every drunk teen when they're down and out and trying to creating a scene at the high school party, this is the fucking song that they're listening to in the car before they get off. It's a pretty depressing song, I gotta say. Pretty sad song. Joseph, who hurt you?
I don't know,
who's
man.
Her name? It's someone. I don't know. You know. He knows. He has her name written on his hand right now. He just doesn't want to say it.
Lupita, if you're out there.
No. Why did you hurt him so?
I don't know. Maybe I'm just maybe I'm just naturally drawn to like the more down. I don't know. I really, and I know it's different. Like, it's different from your all selections. Your selections are more upbeat, or just have a more of an upbeat tone, even though they're not necessarily about that. They just maybe, you know, I don't know.
What you know about that?
It's just.
I'm a
fucking mystery, and this is the song that I chose.
You're building a mystery like Sarah McLachlan. Let's settle down, Sarah.
But that was thanks, guys. Did anybody have anything else to say on my selection before?
No, we're scared that if we offend you,
I'm gonna send you flowers and chocolate or something.
I think we have to uplift you at this point.
Let's move it on.
Speaking of Sarah McLachlan,
excellent pick, Bob. What do you got for us?
Let's end off on a brighter note.
sorry, Bob's going next. My bad.
I went with 30 Seconds to Mars, The Kill. And I chose this song for three reasons. One, the music video is based off of my favorite horror movie of all time, The Shining. I mean, it's crazy, crazy good. It could have done without the bear costume BJ thing, but that's neither here nor there. Number two, Jared Leto. He is the man. I mean, amazing method actor, great lead singer. I saw him at South Padre Island when I was 17, them in Puddle of Mud, which we've talked about exclusively in Worst Lead Singer or Worst Song. Anyways, they were amazing live. They were just crazy good live. I saw them live and they sang this fucking song. So pretty fucking cool. And third, this song is just, it kicks ass. Like, I think that it's the opposite, maybe not the opposite, but it's a downer song like they all are. I mean, that's what the emo classification is. But, like, it's got a great rock sound. It's got a great guitar. It's got a great drum beat. Of course, it had, you know, the fascination with tuxedos and Black Eyeliner. I don't know what the fuck it was. You know, there's a lot of music videos with emo bands wearing tuxedos. I don't get it. Anyways, the song is crazy catchy. The drums and guitar, man, they're fucking awesome. It's a regular – I mean, not regular. I wouldn't say regular, but it's a hard rock song. Especially when you have Jared Leto, you know, screaming out the lyrics, and you know, you kind of feel for the guy. He came out and said that the meaning of the song, it's about the relationship with yourself and about confronting who you are. And I think he's had a lot of confrontations, considering what kind of method actor he is. He's pissed off a lot of people, so I'm sure he spoke to the heart when it came to this kind of thing. But his lyrics are great. His singing is great. The song's message is great, though. It's a pretty, it's one of those that I think that sits, it's a fine line between emo and just alternative rock song. But if it's emo, it's the best fucking emo song there is out there. You know, it broke records on the billboards. It was on the charts for 52 weeks. It was crazy popular. This is the song that made Jared Leto really a superstar and this crazy big actor that we know today. So it's just one of my favorites. And again, it's got a hard rock vibe. And I think that's what I dig so much about it.
Not only is Jared Leto, you know, the shittiest Joker in the DC universe, he's not even the best Joker that sinks. Joaquin Phoenix and Heath Ledger, better performers. This video, of course, as you said, Bob, is a nod to The Shining. I'm sure Jack Nicholson would have gladly taken an axe to the band soundstage, but that's just me. More eyeliner than your aunt at a funeral. Jared Leto is like a beautiful raccoon.
He's a beautiful man.
It's their best song, and it is 100% pure emo. Points taken away because Elijah Wood said that this band sucked, and I believe Jared Leto approached him at a gathering in New York to confront him and physically grabbed him and told him to stop making fun of his band. Elijah Wood is 4'11". He's a hobbit, but that was a very emo thing to do by Jared Leto. Jared Leto describes the meaning of this song as it's really, you mentioned it, a relationship with yourself. It's about confronting your fears, your truths, coming face to face with who you are. Very poignant. So the video is a cool watch. They pay homage to The Shining, but when your video outshines the song, maybe not the best thing for the song itself, but you know, Jared Leto has a lot of people in Hollywood that he could work with and call up. This band is because of who Jared Leto is. If this was anyone else, we'd never hear from them. They work with Bob Ezrin, Josh Abraham, two great producers. Their videos are very ornate. I think this song is good, but take away Jared Leto and it goes nowhere. It's his name recognition and his presence. The band grew up to get watered down by choirs and orchestra, and I think they did that because their progressive style wasn't really going anywhere. It's mainly about listening to Jared Leto sing and smolder in the video. It's a good song, but I don't know about the best. What do you guys think?
I'm gonna have to agree with you there. It's a great song. I think My Chemical Romance walked so Jared Leto can run.
I think the guy from My Chemical Romance needs to go for a run.
Yeah, right. We need tacos. this song was on repeat on radio on rock radio stations like crazy. Like they were trying to make it like fire for real. I mean, what emo kid doesn't know the lyrics to this song? It really is an emo song. Probably the best 30 Seconds to Mars song after I Will Attack. That's my opinion. And Beautiful Eyes is a pretty good one too. But I mean, I really think Jared Leto took advantage of the emo scene and thought, oh, I can make an emo song and I'm going to make a great music video. Because if you notice all the other music videos after this, they're really Jared Leto trying to be the actor that he is. And I mean, it could be a song. I mean, I didn't realize it. I had that epiphany moment right now. Like, man, maybe he was like really in a character and he had to kill that character so he can become Jared Leto again.
I have problems with this band.
Like Elijah Wood problems?
Yeah. Well, no, actually, that's funny that you mentioned that. I don't disagree with Bob, but I don't agree with him either. I recognize this... It's place. I do definitely on everybody's list, and it you know, it's I understand the pick. This band disappoints me because I feel like the shift from the first album, y'all are talking about like this is their best song, this and that, this is the one that, you know, made them, you know, who they are and whatnot, made Jared Leto or the band. I mean, everybody calls it, they're called 30 Seconds to Mars, but we all know it's the Jared Leto band and his, you know, his show. But I thought the first album was a good album. I don't consider it emo. I don't think it's considered emo. It was sort of this more electro, like punk rock, and it's described on Wikipedia as progressive rock and space rock. So I guess I really dug songs from that album. The song I heard from that first album, Capricorn, A Brand New Name, I thought that was a great fucking song. I think Bob knows that song. Edge of the Earth was a good one from there too. Fallen, Welcome to the Universe. These are all great songs from the first album, but they're completely different from the next album. And every single that was released off of that second album, I think Attack was the first one, right? And then it was The Kill. Every song from that album is so different from the first one, and it really disappointed me. I was actually looking forward to like, oh yeah, 30 Seconds to Mars has a new album. Cool. I dug the first one, and then these songs came out, and I was like, I do not like these songs. This is so different. It's different from what the first album was, and it's not for me. So I acknowledge its place in topics like this. It's history for them. It's definitely the one that got them the big break that they needed or wanted, whatever you want to call it, or Jared Leto's big break. I mean, he was already established as a pretty decent actor before this. So, I mean, people knew him. He was doing his own thing. But, you know, I guess to validate himself for wanting to do this, this is the one that did it for him. It's very recognizable, of course. Everybody talks about this. Everybody mentions it. Everybody says it's the best song of them. I can't give an opinion on it because I hate it.
And that's your opinion. That is your opinion.
I can't. Well, I don't like it because I don't like the change in the music. I don't.
What was the other band name that they had, Joseph?
That's true. That's a good question. What were they before that? Come on, God, I don't remember. Do you?
Damn it, Joseph. No, that's what I'm asking you.
I think they were. Didn't they? They had to change it because of like a. Some kind of
they copyright. Were, something. They were
copyright.
They were,
yeah,
they were half a minute to Mars, I think, before that. Anyway, but you know, it's funny because Jared Leto was the crush on the ultimate emo TV show, My So-Called Life. So it's funny how he transitioned from '90s heartthrob on this a TV show that was built around the emo scene to eventually becoming the lead singer of one of the biggest emo bands of that era. So you know, it's always been with him, right?
I do have to agree with Joseph real quick because I was introduced to 30 Seconds to Mars by Capricorn, a brand new name. And that's how I heard about the band. And it's a really good album. You're right.
Yeah.
But The Kill, totally different, which is to me, that's like kind of like Green Day. Oh, okay, cool. We're going to jump into this emo bandwagon and get some major record sales. That's what I took that album as.
So great segue, Joe Michael. So to wrap this up, guys, I have two quick questions. And Joe Michael, one was from you, and I think you said this sort of tongue in cheek, but we talked last 2 weeks ago about Super Bowl halftime performances and saying how Metallica would be like the rock band. And also we didn't say Foo Fighters, but shout outs to them because they would be a good Super Bowl halftime show too. And you had said, would there be any emo bands that could do a Super Bowl halftime? My Chemical Romance would be the closest thing. What do you guys think?
No. You just talked about jocks snugging books out of their hands and then you want them to go play for them. You're fucking nuts.
I think it would have to be 30 Seconds to Mars.
I'm like, who the fuck are these guys?
No. If it was going to be some kind of emo band, like or quote unquote emo band, it would be 30 Seconds to Mars. They'd probably be the ones because it's Jared Leto. It's a name recognition. He's a big star. He's a movie star. He's got this band that's successful. We need him. Let's not get the kids, you know, that wear scary skeleton makeup and look like and go to
I don't think it's skeleton makeup.
Dress up like a gothic prom, you know, like, no, we'll go with the 30 Seconds to Mars group. So I think it would have to be them.
What about you, Joe Michael?
I would say Fall Out Boy because you hear their music in all these sports arenas. I'm like, they're the only guys that can probably pull off a Super Bowl halftime show.
Yeah, and then one of them was married to like Ashley Simpson. So, yeah, they got some celebrity.
You're right. You're right. You know what? You're right.
I think Fall Out Boy might be the best. I mean, like Fall Out Boy, 30 Seconds to Mars. I could see them too. I don't really see emo as being the people that are watching the Super Bowl are probably not the emo fans. Yeah, you know what I mean? I don't see the connection there.
Not at all. Another thing, guys, and we brought up Green Day throughout this, at least towards the end. Was it a money grab, Green Day playing all these emo songs? Yes. What were your guys' thoughts on Green Day going that route?
Yeah, we've touched on this before briefly, and I'll say it again. Complete shift from up after Nimrod. There's just a difference, I think, in the music, and it's most specifically with that. I don't know the name of the album, but the one that had the Boulevard of Broken Dreams song. It's different. They're jumping on the bandwagon of what everybody else is doing, and that's, you know what. I don't hate on people for. I'm not gonna hate on you for doing what you got to do, what you feel you got to do to stay relevant or to continue making money for you know yourself, but you. The kids that listened to you in the 90s with your Kerplunk album and Dookie and whatnot, those kids would probably, if they somehow came from the past into the future and saw you doing Boulevard and Broken Dreams, they would not believe you're fucking Green Day.
Well, they're still alive, Joe, so they're just like 45 years old thinking like, this is a really good song.
Yeah, I'm going to say they sold out because I think they probably had a major hit with Good Riddance and they're like, oh, let's make a whole album because look at My Chemical Romance. We can do that too.
I mean, obviously it's where the money was, right, Bob?
Yeah. I don't think it is as a money grab. I think they saw all the success everybody else is happening, all these new emo bands, and they were kind of falling off.
I think Papa Roach.
Well, fuck, if we make Joseph hates Papa Roach. I think I think they saw that and they're like, well, fuck, if we kind of make music like these young guys, kind of like what we used to do, maybe we can, fit in with the eyeliner crowd. You know what I mean? So I think that's what it was with them, man.
But you saw a lot of these contemporary bands and a lot of these quote unquote progressive bands sort of playing this, like Blue October. You mentioned Papa Roach, Breaking Benjamin. I mean, some could argue Joseph even
Breaking Benjamin.
Some Deftones songs kind of fall in line with some of the
Arcade Fire. Fuck, let's just arcade, throw it
over. I love Arcade Fire.
Yeah.
But you know, a lot of Pilots, most definitely though.
Which one, Joe Michael?
I was like, 21 Pilots, most definitely.
21 Pilots is another one. Billy Joe Armstrong, a big fan of that band as well. Any closing thoughts, guys?
I just want to pose a quick question. In the listening to these songs and going back, and I don't know if you all did as much, you know, let me put on a playlist like I did with Amazon. It was a 2000s emo playlist, and I listened to it. And a lot of them were the ones that, like, okay, they're the obvious ones. And then there was a bunch of other songs in that, like, I thought to myself, is it because I'm older now that, like, I appreciate the musicianship. Two, I'm not an angsty teenager anymore. I'm not, like, so set in my ways of, like, nu metal. Even though I like what I like, but a lot of people know me that I like, you know, a lot of different things. Did you find something that you thought maybe back then was like, oh, this is fucking crap, but then, like, when you hear it now with older ears or more wiser
intel,
you know, did it not, like, you know what, song isn't that bad, like, or it's very deep, and you know what, that guy wrote a pretty good fucking song lyrically or something like that. Did anything stand out to you? I'm just curious.
I will say this. I wasn't a fan of Plain White Tees or Death Cab for Cutie, but listening to some of their songs, I was like, they're not bad. They were good. Maybe at the time I just didn't care for them. I was in a different headspace and I was into different things, but those were the two bands that I listened to and thought, you know what? I didn't give them enough credit. So I would say those Plain White Tees and Death Cab for Cutie. What about you guys?
I'm going to go with, I mean, I always knew Paramore was great. And then me hearing him again, I was like, man, I think they came in just right after the peak of emo music. And I think if they would have, like, debuted maybe a couple years sooner, it would be a different story. But I mean, they're putting new music out right now. Cause I think during the Guilty Pleasure song, I mentioned Misery Business was a Guilty Pleasure song of mine, but me hearing it again through these emo playlists, I was like, man, that song was good. It was better than I thought back in the day. That was one of them. Brand New is to me one of the best emo bands out there, and they really evolved over time. But that the album Deja in Tendu, I'm pronouncing it wrong. It's got a little astronaut as the album cover. Now that album was, I think, musically, musicianship wise, was ahead of its time as well, and it was just so good. But yeah, those are gonna be my picks.
No, yeah, but it made my ears bleed, and I went back to listening to Led Zeppelin like a man. So sorry, guys.
You know, I will say, good answer.
Every time, okay, every episode, I just long to say one joke that makes Randy hit that, like, high pitched laugh, and I did that right there, and shit, I can go to sleep feeling happy tonight.
You know, I will say this. There were a couple of cuts that came out in the 90s that I thought, had this band came out in the 2000s, they would have been bigger. One that came to my mind was Mazzy Star, Fade Into You, which seemed like a very emo song. I thought, I mean, that song was huge in the 90s, but I think with the MySpace era, the internet, the ubiquity of the music that came out in the early 2000s, Napster, LimeWire, etc., if that song came out 7 or 8 years later, it would have been bigger than what it was in the 90s.
And it was in the Angus movie, which helped it become, but imagine if it was like in a Judd Apatow movie with like in a scene. Yeah, imagine how fucking huge that song would be. I think you make a great point with that one. That song is one of the best from the 90s. I think if it came out in the 2000s, it may have had a bigger, or she may have been a bigger star in the music scene.
Great voice.
There's a not so known band from Austin called Commerce Seas that we heard once in Austin, Bob and I. I thought they were cool, and they have an EP. Joe Michael, I'd actually recommend you check these guys out, Calmer Seas. I think if they sound very much like some stuff from back then, and if they had come out or making music around that time. Maybe you can tell they're heavily influenced by this, that 2000s genre of music. I don't know. It's up for the listener to go check them out.
We saw them live at Skull Mechanics, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. They're
cool. I think they would have been in line with what was going on in the 2000s. And I recommend you check it out, Joe Michael. I think you'll like them.
Thanks, man.
Sure. I will say this, since my pick was the only one that really got shit on, I think I win this show because that makes me the most emotional. So therefore I follow the thing.
Joseph says he's the dark one and sad and he's a mystery, building a mystery. I think Joseph is the most, I think he wins the emo thing. Joe Michael did comb his hair. If he put one bang down, I would fucking give him the win right now, dude. Where's the trophy at?
I think all of our picks gave the audience a little glimpse inside our lives.
Exactly. So before we wrap up, Joe Michael, let the listeners know what you're up to business-wise, where they can find you. Tell us a little bit about that.
You can find me on Instagram, Lazarus.coffee. I currently own a coffee business, and I have a line of coffees that are very exotic and very different. So if you're really into coffee,
several leather bound books.
Yes. If you drink your coffee with your pinky up, you will love Lazarus Coffee. That's for sure.
I'm in.
There you go. We all love coffee.
Yeah. And right. And we always give back to the community. So right now we're actually raising some funds to help out some youth kids in the summertime. So yeah, it's kind of what we're looking forward to. We're looking at expanding a little bit more, and this year will be awesome.
Love that, dude.
Chris, if you order online, you can ship it to ship. You do. You should.
Oh yeah,
ship
we can ship it all in the U.S. Yeah.
Where can we? We got to get that out.
Yeah. Where can we order your coffee?
LazarusCoffee.co.
LazarusCoffee.co. And we're going to link that in the show notes as well. We'll push it on the Instagram stories. But Joe Michael, thanks so much. You know, you always have an open invite. I was talking about how last year we're thanking the guests, and I was like, shit, it's been over a year since Joe Michael came back on, and we need him on more often because you just have great insight, great sense of humor, man. We love hearing from you, man. You're a great guest.
Thanks, man. I'm honored to be with you guys.
It was funny because as soon as I jumped on, like, he was already telling you his story, and we started laughing within the first 30, 40 seconds. You know, he's one of the ones that, I think, I mean, we've had great guests, and usually there's like a warming up period to where you got to get to know each other and X, Y, and Z. I think with Joe Michael, it's like right off the bat, we're throwing jokes and we're having fun, and he feels like he fits right in. We did have remember that one thing that we decided for Joe Michael to do? This was like 8 months ago. Yeah. We're like, we got to try to get him to do something like that. We still may have that in line for you folks. There's like a one-liner once every couple of weeks thing. Do you remember what it was?
The cold brewed facts the hard brewed facts or something like that.
Hard brewed it was like the hard brewed facts, like where we fucked up, you know, in a specific episode. Once a month, you pick one episode and tell us where we made mistakes. I think that would be
pretty
cool.
There was a specific song we wanted.
Lazarus copy.
Yeah, we're going to do, because Lazarus sounds like Nazareth, so we're going to use Nazareth's hair of the dog. Now you're messing with a son of a bitch.
Yeah, that's going to be your theme song coming in. All right, the hard, cold, brew facts of the
day. Those were the cold, brewed facts.
Now you're messing with a son of a bitch. So Joe Michael is always good at, you know, messing with
It's going to happen.
Letting us know where we fucked up, letting us know who had bad selections. That's why he's such an important guest and such a fun guest to have on the show. So great job.
I want to say this, dude. I was really, really happy. He made one comment before we started recording. He was like, I feel like I know you all so well because I listen to all your episodes, and like, you know, he feels like there's a connection there, which is pretty crazy that he's continued to listen and then like he's happy to see us. That's pretty fucking cool. I'm hoping a lot of other people out there that listen to us religiously or they listen to us, you know, a couple of times a month that they feel the same way, that they feel that they're a part of the conversation and like we're the funny friends that drink and talk shit with them.
And Joe, I don't know if your Instagram is private. The American Beaner, is that public?
Public, yeah. The American Beaner.
The American Beaner.
Yeah. Finally, the American Beaner has returned.
There you go.
I like it.
Thank you so much, Joe.
That's coffee bean, folks.
That's coffee bean. Yes, it's not anything.
I'm taking Beaner back, guys. Taking it back.
Excellent. That's our show, everyone. Listeners, we'd like to hear from you. Hit us up and let us know what your favorite all-time emo song is. Most importantly, let us know what you think about the show. You may reach us at formidableopponents@gmail.com and follow us on all forms of social media by searching for Formidable Opponents. We want to thank Creative Little Pill for her great artwork this week, and you're going to love this one. You can follow her on Instagram at Creative Little Pill. She does great work. You can find her on Fiverr. If you need podcast artwork cover, please check out Creative Little Pill at Fiverr. She will give you a great podcast cover art, and she will detail it specifically to your requests. Please rate and review us on Apple and Spotify. Join us next episode, and we'll be back next week with Worst TV Show Ending. So for Joe Michael, Joseph, and Bob, this is Randall. We'll see you all next week.
I wish I was anywhere with anyone making out right now.
Settle down.